And all the players right now are on their feet.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to get there. There goes another one. Hands are starting to be raised. Not quite yet. Line drive. That may stay up. Popped it up. Got to have one.
I don't think he did it.
He did not do it.
Oh, my.
Vlad Guerrero Jr. will hang on and win the 2023 T-Mobile Home Run Derby. Randy Arozarena comes up just short. Congratulations to Vlad. He and his dad, both Home Run Derby champions. There you go. A tweet from Vlad Guerrero Sr. What a performance. Proud of you, son.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is your Home Run Derby champion for 2023. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. Going from 10 to noon today, I'm Ben Schulman. She is Julia Kreutz filling in today for Blake Murphy, Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes. And as we both expertly predicted it yesterday, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. wins the Home Run Derby. And as you heard from the call, it was pretty close. It looked like he might not, but he just pulled it out.
It was very, very close, Ben. Good morning to you. Good morning to everyone listening to us. I will say that that was a nail biter until the end. Did not predict that at all. Didn't think, honestly, that that Vlad would make it past the semifinals against Julio Rodriguez, the hometown guy. You could hear it when he was up to bat, how much those fans were behind him. Broke the single round record with 41 homers in the first round. It was so cool to see. And especially after he did that, I thought to myself, okay, this man is riding on adrenaline right now. There's no way that Vlad can actually surpass him here. It would take a lot, but that's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for you, right? He has the gene. It's in him to shine in those big moments, and he does, and then does it again against Randy Arozarena. And it was really nice to see just how happy he was, right, Ben? The expression on his face as he stormed onto the field. I thought it was a really, really cool moment.
Yeah, an awesome moment for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Second home run derby, second time he had made the final, and he was so close in 2019. Got to the top of the home run world here in 2023. And it was, you know, a really interesting derby all around. You mentioned Julio with the 41 homers to break the record. Vlad's 25 in the final is a finals record now. It's a shorter round, so that's part of the reason why, and the fatigue setting in. And that fatigue, it kind of felt in a way like Julio did to himself what Vlad did in 2019. Julio, to a certain extent, maybe overdid it, and it was awesome. I mean, it maybe was the performance of the night, but in terms of winning the whole thing, overdid it in round one with that awesome black and yellow bat.
Yeah.
And didn't have a lot left in the tank when he faced Vladdy.
Yeah, it's funny because in 2019, Vladdy had to do it, right? So he went to the swing off against Jock Peterson. He needed all of those home runs in order to make it to the final, whereas Julio was just putting on a show. I believe he went first, right?
Yeah, so you don't ever know.
Yeah, and so you're just going to try to hit as many homers as you possibly can, but for sure that makes a difference moving forward. I think that we also saw that with Luis Robert in round two, right? I believe that his pitcher wasn't maybe as sharp in the second round as he was in the first, and that certainly played a factor. But the fatigue is real, and it's real for all of these players, no matter how conditioned they are, unless, of course, they're Mookie Betts, who didn't take a timeout in the first round.
Well, I picked Mookie Betts yesterday to beat Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the first round, and then I was watching the broadcast, as everyone was, the ESPN broadcast, and they quoted Mookie saying, "I'm not going to win. I just don't want to come in last." And I was like, oh, no.
How did that make you feel?
Well, he came in last, first of all. And I sat there, you know, I was trying to convince myself that I didn't make the worst picks. And one thing they said, too, was Arozarena had practiced three times and had never hit more than 18 in a three-minute session. He hit 24 in the first round. Now, he had 30 seconds onto that, but I believe he already had the 18 by the time that was done. And he hit 35 in the second round. But yeah, that did not make me feel good. My picks were almost entirely wrong. Essentially, J-Rod going to the second round and Luis Robert beating Adley Rutschman were the only things I had. But you had a Rosarena in the final, didn't you? Or you at least had him pass Garcia.
I did. The first round, I actually got everything right, and I was feeling really good about myself, and I thought, okay, why didn't I enter the bracket challenge? I could have won $100,000. What am I doing? And then I got everything wrong in round two. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? Okay, that's par for the course, I would say. I was a little surprised at how much I'd gotten right, and then it was kind of the universe balancing itself out. It worked out in the end, and really, what a day for Toronto. If I'm not mistaken, the first Blue Jays player ever to win the Derby. The first father-son duo ever to win the Derby, right? With Vlad Sr. doing it in 2007.
Yes.
And Guerrero doing it this year. Just a really, really special night. Something that we haven't gotten into yet. You mentioned Adley Rutschman, and I'm very curious to hear what was going through your head as he switched to bat from the right side in those final 30 seconds, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I was a little bit surprised. And at the same time, they kept mentioning in Seattle, it plays better to right-handed hitters. Now, he last year was by far a better left-handed hitter. He's been a much better right-handed hitter this year. And then you just saw him hitting tanks. He hit 6 out of 7 swings out of the park in 30 seconds. It was awesome, and I just was sitting there thinking, like, Adley, hit from the right side the whole time. What are you doing? You think of all, you know, you mentioned the pitching of Robert. Garcia had some pitching issues, too. Adley had his dad throwing him pitches, which in theory would either be the most or least qualified guy if you want to take it two different ways. And he was hitting absolute tanks to the right side. And I wonder, I mean, Robert did top his 27 home runs with 28 with 55 seconds to go. So who knows what would have happened, but I do wonder. I think it's awesome, and I think it was cooler overall, but for purely winning, if he had hit right-handed the whole time, would that have been better, or is it something where Adley takes less fatigue because you're using different sides of your body, kind of, whereas everyone else is doing the same motion again and again and again?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, and also, you know, this is a show, right?
Yeah,
that's what
for
this
sure.
is about. And playing for the Baltimore Orioles, I'm not sure how much national coverage or attention Adley Rutschman gets. Well, guess what? He's getting attention now,
for sure.
Right? Everyone knows Adley Rutschman's name. It's kind of unprecedented. I was on the desk for MLB.com yesterday, and we were sort of discussing it. No one could remember, although we couldn't say for sure, if there was ever a home run or derby participant that switch hit in the middle of a round or even switch hit in the competition overall. So that was so unique, right? And then he goes to talk to Buster Olney, and Olney asks, how do you feel? And he says, I think it's pretty respectable. It was awesome. Like, it was it was the type of moment that makes the home run derby iconic and worth it. So really, really cool to see. You did mention pitchers, right?
Yes.
Adley getting to get pitched by his dad. Vlad Jr. also had a pretty special one in John Schneider.
Yeah, I couldn't find, you know, they don't really record the stats of who pitches to you in the home run derby, but I was also listening, you know, after our show yesterday to some of the talk on Sirius XM on MLB Network Radio leading up. And they were pretty sure that a manager has not thrown in a home run derby before. I mean, there's special circumstances that highlights the special relationship these guys have. These two really came up together, Vladdy just beating Schneider to the majors by a little bit. But to have a major league manager out there, and it's even a little bit rare that John Schneider throws BP regularly to these guys.
Truly.
I mean, it's just something that he did before, so he continues to do. But I think it's awesome to have, you know, Schneider out there with Vladdy on the big stage showcasing, you know, the great relationship that they had, and Vladdy not afraid to take control in that event. Usually Schneider's in charge, but he
right
was
on.
Like, hey, give it a little bit in on the hands. And I think if you don't notice the pitcher too much, they've done a good job, and I think Schneider did a good job.
Yeah, that's correct, and that's perfect. I did want to ask you, you've been around some minor league teams in your past here. How valuable do you think it is? We know how rare it is that, you know, a manager will manage the same group of guys through the minors and then in the majors. It hasn't been done a whole lot. But, you know, to have those moments, to have Schneider regularly throw BP and then say, you know what? Yes, I'll forego my All-Star break and I'll go with you to Seattle to throw in the Derby. How do you think, Ben, that sort of aids or helps the relationship on the field as well with what the Blue Jays are trying to accomplish this year?
I think it just reinforces, you know, Schneider's commitment to the players, how much he cares about them. Obviously, you know, when you're involved with guys in the minors, it's a whole different situation, less than, you know, in-game strategy and stuff, which becomes one of your primary roles. It's a lot of foundational things that you're teaching these guys while you're learning yourself, obviously, although a lot of the time once you get to manager, you've been a coach for a little bit at least. But I think that, you know, these two have a great relationship, and I think we knew it, but for Schneider to, you know, not be, you know, too big of a star, I think, for Guerrero to make sure that he can, you know, forego his All-Star break, even though he's the manager now to come. I think that it can be reciprocated in a lot of ways when, you know, Vladdy, who's a big star, Schneider needs something out of him. I think that it's just like a very back and forth strong relationship between the two where, you know, they're committed to helping each other out. This is something, obviously, it has nothing to do with the success of the Toronto Blue Jays whatsoever and is purely for Vladdy. And then Vladdy can return the favor by doing something that helps the success of the team. Not that he wasn't going to anyway, but I think it just continues to build that trust, really, that Schneider's looking out for the guys and willing to, you know, take the extra mile to make sure that, you know, they're happy, they're having a strong season, and you know, maybe trying to help build some confidence with Vladdy too, which has been a thing that we've talked about the last couple months.
Yeah, it's interesting because speaking to people around this team in the coaching staff and whatnot, it's very clear that Vlad wants to be a leader, right? He wants to be the guy. He wants to be a reference point, the one that is sort of at an even keel when things are going well or not. And I wonder how much seeing, you know, John Schneider's commitment, like you said, helps in that path. Vladdy is very young, and we spoke about that yesterday a little bit, Ben, and it's easy to forget because he's been around for so long, and, you know, he's had a near MVP season and all of that, but thinking about that aspect of leadership, of mentality, of staying committed to not only the product on the field, but also your teammates, also your coaching staff, and really being there, I do wonder how much that counts to see his manager who has a family, right? We saw Kevin Gausman say, listen, I'm going to go stay with my family during the break. We'll be back in Seattle in less than a week. And so it just doesn't make sense. And you have to respect that, I think. I think that it's extremely fair for a player to be in that position and say that. But for Schneider to do that, it does show, you know, that extra mile, that extra care. And as Vlad, and even Bo Bichette, who is also there and who we're going to talk about little bit later, because he kind of stole the show too. To see and to experience that level of commitment from their manager, I do believe that it may cause ripple effects for the rest of their careers as they grow into the men, the players that and the leaders that they're supposed to be here.
As we talk about how young Vladdy is, we talked about Adley Rutschman, who's just in his first full season, second season of Major League Baseball.
That's wild.
And he's older than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Vladdy's been playing since 2019.
That's right.
Vladdy debuted last year, but Adley, a college player at Oregon State too, so broke in really in his early 20s rather than, you know, Vladdy, who was 2019 kind of when he was pushing the majors at that point. But a huge night for Guerrero, like you mentioned. The first father-son duo, I believe the first Blue Jay home run champion as well. Interesting wrinkle to that. When Vlad Guerrero Sr. won the title in 2007, he beat Blue Jay Alex Rios in the final.
Oh, wow.
So by that thing happening, which probably made a lot of Blue Jays fans maybe a little bit sad at that point, now you get the first Blue Jay being Vlad Guerrero Jr. and the father-son combo. Very different tournament style at that point. It was the old 10 outs format. So Vlad Sr. hit 3 home runs in the final. Alex Rios hit 2 in San Francisco, I believe.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's kind of like coming full circle, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the universe balances itself out as it did with my Derby picks.
Seriously.
it's funny because, you know, seeing Vlad speak post tournament, someone asked who would win in a face off between junior and senior. And he apparently stopped and really thought about it. He said, you know what? If it was the timed format, I would win. but if it was the outs format, my dad would win.
Very diplomatic answer from Vladimir Guerrero.
100%. And also it shows that he's aware of who he is in the moment that he's in right now, right? He knows what he's good at, maybe what needs to improve, and what it is that he can learn from his dad, really, and from the way that he played the game. I believe that we saw some swings from Vlad yesterday that were very reminiscent of Vlad Sr. In the Derby. You can kind of see the resemblance there. We've also seen it in season when he hits that ball almost on the ground against the New York Mets to send a game-winning RBI single down the left field line. I forget who the pitcher was, but basically it was a slider almost on the in the dirt, and he extends to get that. And that is very Vladdy Sir-esque, if you will, right? It's cool to see sort of the similarities, but then Vlad Jr. is also very cognizant, very aware to say, this is what he does better than me, which I think is fascinating.
Notable, Vladimir Guerrero Senior now hit 44 home runs, his most home runs in a season. Vladdy did hit 48 a couple years ago. Both did it for Canadian teams when Vlad Senior was with the Expos.
Yeah, it's a, you know what? It's the father-son combo of baseball. I think it's pretty unrivaled. I can't think of another sport that has so many examples of that type of success. I do think it adds to the beauty of the game. And this is just another example, and it's really, really special that both of, you know, Vlad Sir and Vlad Jr. had have such a special connection to Canada, right? And we're seeing sort of that shine through again here. I will ask you this, and I'm only partly kidding.
Okay.
Do you think that it's a coincidence that Vlad Jr. won the Home Run Derby the night after Beyonce played at Rogers Center?
So it's not like the Drake cursed. It's like the Beyonce boost or
That's
something
right.
like that.
The Beyonce blessing.
It's possible. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Vladdy has at least a couple Beyonce songs in his phone. He takes me as a guy that that could do like a bit of a Single Girls Dance if he
there
needed to or something like that. So I wouldn't
wait,
be shocked by
did
it.
Did you just call it Single Girls?
Correct me.
It's Single Ladies.
Single Ladies.
Oh, Ben.
Oh, that's brutal. That's almost as bad as my picks yesterday.
But I'm sorry, Beyonce, if you're listening to
yes,
this.
Yes, my apologies, Beyonce. My apologies. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr., your home run champion. This is Chase Talk Plus. I'm Ben Schulman. She's Julia Croyd. Some great guests coming up. Buck Martinez is going to join us. Chris Rose, formerly of MLB Network, now with John Boy Media, is going to join us as well. Let's get into it. Better performance yesterday, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Bo Bichette?
Oh, man. Bo was so good, right?
He was great.
The thing is that he is so quiet. He's a shy guy, or you know, at least he presents himself like that. I've had the opportunity to speak to him a bunch of times as a member of the media, even one-on-one. He's a shy guy, or that is how he comes across. He's very quiet. He's very measured in how he will convey the messages that he's trying to pass along, which I think is a good thing. I think it plays into the sort of his game, extremely focused human being, right? He is 100% in the game. Usually the first one out on the field for batting practice or for fielding practice or whatever it may be. And then you see this other side of Bo Bichette with the microphone on ESPN, right? Where he is trying to speak a little bit of Spanish. Bo's mother, of course, is from Brazil, so he speaks a bit of Portuguese. And I'm from Brazil, and I can tell you that every Brazilian believes that they are fluent in Spanish. They are not. And that's kind of what you see there, right? That sort of personality shining through. He's trying to talk to Juan Soto, and then at one point Juan Soto's like, what are you trying to say? And he says, you know what, whatever, I'm just going to say it in English. And that was so fun, right? It was so fun to see. And then Soto gives Vladdy some advice in Spanish, throws it back to Bo, and Bo just says, yep, what he said.
Yeah, and that really got Soto.
Amazing.
Soto, like, jumped right on top of him when he said that. Or he kept calling, Eduardo, can you hop in here? So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Ben, again, right, we are talking about maybe different sides of these guys building a personality, building character, charisma. Bo has been sort of you know, deemed one of the leaders of this clubhouse, the guy that is a reference point. I asked him about that in an interview a couple of weeks ago. And I, you know, basically said, what does that mean to you? He said, I want to be the guy that my teammates can come to, regardless of whether it's about baseball, it's about life, if things are good, if things are bad, if we're winning or we're losing. I want to be the same guy, and I want everyone here to know that they can come to me with whatever. That is not necessarily rare for guys to sort of have that mentality, but to achieve that, I think, is more rare, right? And it's the difference between a good player and a great player, or a good leader and a great leader. And it's cool to see that other side having that in mind, that he wants to be that sort of presence.
Because he is still, you know, we talked about Vlade being 24. Bo is 25. This is a team that's average age is around 29. I mean, it's a lot different of a makeup of a team than last year, where maybe it would have even just age-wise made a little more sense for Bo to be in that spot. But yeah, he continues to be a leader, has some fun as well. I got to ask, you know, Bo is the team leader in home runs right now. How do you think he would do in a derby-type setting?
It's funny because I think it was Soto. Yeah, because Bo asked Soto, do you miss the derby? And Soto said something like, well, you know, I kind of miss it, but I won it. I did it. I'm fine. I'm just here now to have fun and to coach these guys. He said that kind of like tongue in cheek and whatever. And then he turns to Bo and says in Spanish, so I'm not sure if Bo understood, but he says, I want to see this guy in the derby. And that was pretty cool for Juan Soto to say, I would like to see Bo Bichette in the derby. Now, I think it was Blake who asked me, Blake Murphy, who was the original host of this show. Good luck getting me out of here now, Blake. he asked me, you know, what other Blue Jays would you want to see in the derby? And I said, you know what? The only reason why I don't say Bo Bichette is that his game is a little different, right? His game is more line drives. It's not necessarily pulling the ball, although he can, but it's more of a situational type of hitting than it is just hitting for power. And the fact that he is the home run leader on this team right now just tells me that he's making good choices at the plate. He's never going to be the guy that's going to walk a whole lot. If you look at the walk versus strikeout number, it's kind of scary even, right? You kind of get taken aback by it because that's just not his game.
Very aggressive.
Yeah, and that's also why he led the league in hits for the past two seasons and will probably get that crown again this year.
Yeah, he is, I think, 122 hits, something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, really good year.
Amazing bat-to-ball skills there, and really a guy that knows his strengths and is not trying to be anything else. And when he does take that walk, it's like, good for you, again showing that that you're aware of what's happening. But I don't think that you can look at this team and not say that Bo Bichette has been the best player in the first half, right? He would take the MVP crown. Maybe, you know, obviously Kevin Gausman comes into to play here as well. But when it comes to position players, Bo Bichette was the best Blue Jay in the first half.
We're going to do some half-season awards tomorrow, by the way. Oh. So that should be a lot of fun. Dante Bichette did hit in a home run derby as well. Didn't win one like Vlad Guerrero, but in 94, he was the first ever Colorado Rocky to hit in a home run derby. So that's kind of fun.
That is kind of fun. That's, again, kind of like following in the footsteps. We may see Bo Bichette in a derby. I'm not saying that it's never going to happen, especially if we have players like Juan Soto being like, you're next.
Yeah, it is possible. What I would want to see the most, I think, and I did bring up Bichette, but is a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Danny Jansen home run
right
derby. Because Jansen's all pull side power. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go home runs per plate appearance, I haven't done the math, but I would guess he's probably the team leader in home runs per plate appearance. He's hit 11 this year. Bo's hit 15, Vlad's hit 13, and Danny was injured for a large portion. I do think that Danny potentially could give Vladdy a run for his money, but that, if it did happen, I think we'll probably stay within the confines of batting practice and the team's inner circle.
Lucky us, we get to experience that. Speaking of fun, can we please talk about Randy Arozarena?
Let's talk about Randy Arozarena. Cowboy boots?
He makes the whole event, doesn't he? It's so, so cool. Our colleague Sho Ali sometimes says, you know, there are certain players that are just effortlessly cool. Randy Arozarena is one of those players. And then he brings out his kid, right? And he's holding his kid, and he puts her down, and he does the Randy pose.
Yeah.
And it, everything just plays into it so well. And by him saying, you know, Buster Olney asks him, do you think you have a chance to win when he makes it to the finals? And he says, you know what? Just by being here, I'm a winner. It's like I in my life, I usually don't have a chance and I end up winning anyway. You kind of want to see a guy like that succeed, don't you? It's really cool.
For sure. I think Randy is one of the most fun players in all of Major League Baseball. I loved, you know, the guys go back to the cage. They hit in between rounds a little bit, except in the final when Vlad went first. Randy crossed his arms, sat on the bench, and gave him just like a little bit of a stare and watched him the entire time. And I'll admit, going into that final bonus 30 seconds, I thought Randy was going to be the Home Run Derby champion. He had one of his worst 30-second stretches of the entire Derby. I believe he only hit two home runs in that entire stretch. But he had a good shot, and it was really, I think, the difference of Vladdy hitting 440s that kept Randy from raising the crown instead.
Yeah, it's whoever won there, I think, would have been pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And it would have been well-deserved, is my thought process. But especially because Vlad did not get that rest time, and he just had to go straight to it in between rounds. That also tells me that it adds sort of to the allure or to the myth of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. winning the Derby in 2023 under those conditions. We'll see, Ben, what that does for his second half. It's not unprecedented that guys have sort of used the Derby as a way to get going. I do believe also that Julio Rodriguez has a chance to sort of fall under that category, kind of a down year for him so far as the Mariners struggle here. But it will be sort of fascinating and a storyline to follow. How does Vlad do in the second half? And I'm not saying that the Derby or winning the Derby is going to solve all his problems. Absolutely not. But do you believe that there is sort of a boost to be gained out of this and just, not only mentally, but also physically as you go back into game action? What can a Derby win do for Vladdy Jr.?
I think it's mostly just a confidence thing, right? Like, I'm not sure that, you know, he elevates more baseballs because he elevated 72 of them yesterday, unless John Schneider is pitching, you know, for the Diamondbacks coming up, in which case I think he'll do a great job. But I do wonder for Vladdy, who's obviously not having his best year and at times just didn't totally look like himself at the plate. I think when you see him looking entirely like himself, he's controlling every plate appearance really well, especially controlling the strike zone. And some of that, I think, does have to do with confidence. Obviously, approach is, you know, down to studying and keeping yourself disciplined and stuff like that. But I think a lot of it is confidence as well. And I do wonder if this can kind of give him just a little bit of an emotional boost and have him feeling good. He had a strong finish, like we talked about yesterday, to the first half. He hit four home runs in the last 15 games, had an OPS near 900 in that stretch. He has this strong performance. We'll see what he does in the All-Star game tonight. And then maybe he can come out into the second half feeling really good, maybe a little bit more carefree, as some Blue Jays fans might be a little bit less kind of on his back right now after that Home Run Derby title. And I think that could translate to good things for Guerrero.
We saw the fatigue yesterday. We
sure
saw how tired he got in between rounds, or even when he asked for time. There was one round, I believe it was round one, in which he had maybe 3 seconds to go and Schneider was ready to throw him one more and he just waved him off. He was like, nope, I'm done. Are you concerned at all about that for the second half? That's also something that players have mentioned in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I do have maybe a tiny bit of concern. Like, I certainly hope, you know, knock on wood, that this didn't result in some sort of injury for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I don't think it did. There's been no reporting in that direction. But I would wonder, you know, we'll see what kind of run he gets tonight. If he is so fatigued, maybe he just says to Dusty Baker, and I don't think they care so much, like, maybe don't put me in. You don't put every single guy in on the roster. I think that, you know, the Blue Jays in general, I mean, John Schneider is there with them. I'm sure they have a pretty good plan, because as fun as the Home Run Derby is, it, again, doesn't truthfully matter for much of anything. When a team's hoisting the World Series trophy or winning the ALDS or CS, no one remembers if the Home Run Derby champ is on that team or not. So I would guess that the Blue Jays have worked out this plan with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that has him feeling better coming out of the break. And, you know, they've given Brandon Belt a handful of spots at first. They have Kevin Biggio who can play first too. So there is definitely a lot of availability to DH Vlad as we get underway a little bit in the second half. And I mean, not to spin off on that conversation, but there's actually been better numbers this year when he DHs anyway. Right. So could do some of that maybe to help him out. What do you think?
Yeah, certainly a lot of contingency plans, right? Yeah. It's not like they went into this completely unprepared or not thinking about the second half, which is going to be extremely important. But seeing Vlad, he's sort of in his best physical form, I would say, that we have seen maybe. And so that, I think, bodes well, and it sort of inspires a little bit more confidence as the Blue Jays try to figure that stuff out. And if he's hitting better as he's DHing this year, and sure, the sample size may be a little bit smaller than we'd like, but that's also something to consider, especially with the way the Belt has been swinging the bat. It did make sense, I think, for Vlad to make his Derby return this year. The Blue Jays and Vlad himself have been very, very cautious with that. You know, there's a reason why he sat it out so many years. But overall, I do believe that the pros sort of outweighed the cons here. And especially with Schneider there and with those contingency plans in effect, with the depth of the Blue Jays roster at first base, provided Brandon Belt can stay healthy, it looked like a good time for Vlad to do this.
Even fellow All-Star Whit Merrifield has played a little first base in his career too. So the Blue Jays with some options there. We're speaking about the second half. Before we get a quick break, Bo Bichette had his All-Star media availability yesterday in Seattle, and he talked about the Blue Jays headed into that second half. Let's take a listen.
I honestly think we're in a good place. I mean, we have a chance to make the playoffs. We're not out of the division yet, and there's a lot of baseball left to go. You never know when those hot streaks are going to come. And if they don't, you just keep on grinding and getting after it and doing your best. But, I mean, I think we've had times, moments where we've played well, but we haven't really put together, like, the streaks for weeks at a time, you know. And so I think that's still coming, and I think we're in a good place. And, you know, we either believe in ourselves or we don't. So we'll continue to go out there, and I know we do. So continue to go out there and play hard and see what happens.
That's Bo Bichette on the first half and then headed into the second half. And he's saying, I think a lot of people agreeing, they haven't necessarily hit a hot streak yet. They're 9 games above 500 and tied for the second wild card right now. What did you think about Bo's comments?
Yeah, that's it's kind of has been the sentiment of this team, right? We saw Chris Bassitt say something similar in one of his last starts before the break, saying, listen, I don't think we're close to hitting our stride yet, to everything clicking at once and us playing our best baseball. That's true. There have been times when the pitching has been really good. There have been times when the hitting has been really good, and the wins keep coming, except for that ugly month of May, because guys are sort of picking each other up, right? So we saw that game, I believe it was in Detroit, that went 11 innings or 10 innings without score. That was the bullpen and Jose Berríos sort of putting the team on their backs and saying, you know what, until you figure out how to score some runs and how to swing the bat here, we will keep you in the game. And we have also seen the opposite, right? And starts when maybe Yusei Kikuchi scuffled a little bit. There's a reason why he went 5-0 to start the season. It's because the hitting was showing up. So when it's time to hit their stride, the Blue Jays are probably going to go on that little bit more of a run and win a bunch of games at once, like we saw maybe the Rays do at the beginning of the year. And let's not forget that now the Rays are sort of on a downswing, right? They lost a handful of games in a row before the All-Star break here. So that is sort of the nature of baseball. It's always going to be the nature of baseball. And for the Blue Jays, if they can stay in it, and by the time they reach that run of wins, are in a good position to sort of make the postseason, there is good times and better times to get hot. And that is kind of what I think the Blue Jays should aim for here.
Yeah, I think last year's Yankees are a bit of an example of that. Blue Jays 7 games back of the division. But we're talking home run derby and All-Star game. We are going to take a quick step aside, but when we come back, We're going to pitch some of our All-Star Skills Week competitions, kind of like what could we add to the game? And we want to hear from you. So text us 590-590. We want to hear if you were going to add a skills competition-esque thing or just anything, really, to this week outside of the Home Run Derby, the Futures game, and the All-Star game. Let us know what you want in All-Star Week, and we will talk about that. This is Jays Talk Plus. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. We'll be back in a moment on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus on this Tuesday morning. Going from 10 to noon today, I'm Ben Schulman. She is Julia Kreutz filling in for Blake Murphy today. Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Rolnick on the show as well. We're going to talk some maybe experimental things with the All-Star Week. What
Love
could
it.
They add? I do think the All-Star Week is pretty good.
Yeah,
I think that it's enjoyable, especially like we were talking about yesterday with the draft being incorporated now on day one as well. But we asked for your ideas too, and you can still text them in 590-590. And I figure we may as well go to the people first before we pitch some of our own. This one has a lot of crossover with what I was thinking. It's Richard and Whitby, and he wants hardest slash fastest throw from the outfield. So kind of like the hardest shot competition in the NHL,
right.
But for the outfield, he wants it from all three positions. So left fielders, center fielders, right fielders, and then maybe fastest runner around the bases as well. What do you think about those two?
I love it. I would add maybe an accuracy element to
that would be cool.
To the outfield throws. I understand the appeal of hardest or fastest throw. I do think that there's something to be said about accuracy as well. And it may be an easier pitch on the league and for the teams, because obviously you don't want anyone straining a muscle during the All-Star break. And so if you sort of phrase it as more of an accuracy thing than a strength thing, it's a little bit more possible. I know that we are supposed to just suspend belief for a little bit and just go with what we want, regardless of the actual impact. But, you know, if you're actually thinking about something that's a little bit more feasible, the accuracy may be a little bit easier to sell, although hardest to throw would probably be more fun.
It would be, you know, it's interesting because, like, would you have them just whip it into a net, or would there be an accuracy component to the hardest throw? Because
right,
a lot of guys can just fire it anywhere at a high speed, but maybe you have to get it at least within some confines, and then it keeps the guys from going completely all out. But yeah, I agree. I think the teams would maybe have an issue with it, although I think it's a great idea, Richard. I love, and what I was going to bring up was a fastest runner competition.
Nice.
I think in my mind that there may be few things more fun like than using the bases too. We know some guys are really fast in dead sprints. Frankly, we have the numbers that are easy to measure to know which guys are the fastest. But base running in itself is its own skill, I think, with angles. I would be interested in something that would also get some unconventional guys to the All-Star game. Like if Esteori Ruiz started at the plate, and I don't know, maybe Ronald Acuna or someone really fast started at second base at the same time, and you had to do the 360 feet around, and whoever got back to their own base first wins. So it was like a live race during that time instead of more of like a time trial thing where you're putting numbers up on the board and not knowing really how fast everyone is, like the fastest skater in the NHL skills competition where they just do it around and then you see how the times compare.
That's absolutely fascinating, and I can see how much thought you've put into it.
I've unfortunately put a lot of
thought really into it. That's really cool. I love that, and I do think that, you know, that would open some doors for some other guys to be in the All-Star weekend as well, or week as well. I know that we were talking about maybe like how to get Ellie De La Cruz right into the All-Star game. he has kind of turned into a base stealing machine. The other day he stole 3 bases in a row, including home.
Within 2 pitches, he stole 3rd and home before, like on the same pitch essentially. He just popped up and took off for home.
It was ridiculous, right? And something like that, you know, expanding sort of the skills competitions may allow for some guys that are just starting out or some fringe guys that do one thing really well to also participate on the festivities. So it would be really cool. And we know that base running has turned into a major selling point for Major League Baseball, right? That's why so many of the rule changes had to do with base stealing and base running. So it would be very, very cool.
Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, Joel Sherman of The New York Post, both wrote yesterday and I think 2 days ago, respectively, about Elly De La Cruz getting in. And thinking about the specific skills, too, I went to look at who ESPN listed as their biggest snubs. They had in the American League, Wander Franco won. They had Matt Chapman second. They felt like Matt Chapman may have been a bit hard done by. And it was tough because the fan vote didn't have Jose Ramirez in it, who's kind of the clear favorite. So whoever, clear favorite in terms of, frankly, just the numbers this year and production at third. So whoever between Josh Young and Chapman didn't win the popularity contest was going to be in a bit of trouble there. I don't think they were saying to take Young out. I think they were actually looking for some other guys maybe to remove instead. But I'd wonder if it would be fun. You know, when I was a kid, I played in a baseball tournament once in North Carolina, and they had quickest double play competition. And that could involve guys like a Matt Chapman or something. If maybe you were turning 5-4-3 double plays, let's say, to utilize some of the defensive talents of these defense first guys that really struggle to get into the All-Star game because most All-Star bids are won with the bat.
That's really cool. So you were in a tournament in which they had sort of that competition.
They had like a little skills competition. The kids from North Carolina smoked us, all
really?
Of them. Yeah, we were, I think as you get older, the gap gets a little bit smaller. But when you're like 8 or 9 and they play year-round baseball and you don't play year-round baseball, like I was the first baseman. So there was not much that I had to do in terms of the double play. I just had to stretch. But I remember watching a ground ball go to, I think I was 8 years old. And the shortstop flips it. And the second baseman didn't catch it. He barehanded it against the outside part of his glove and then tossed it over to first. And then the next kid just barehanded it straight and threw it to first.
At 8 years old?
Yeah. Maybe we might have been 9. We might have been. I'll get a text from my dad or something at some point. But, I mean, these kids, like, were switch hitting on us. It was a whole thing. But that was a really fun competition, I feel like, that could maybe involve some defensive players. We got a text from Joel from Burlington. He said, crazy idea.
Love it.
In extra inning games that go long, I believe he's just talking about the All-Star game, say 12 innings, it would be cool to settle the game with a home run contest, some sort of like penalty shootout like we see in other sports like soccer and hockey.
Yeah, not a bad idea at all, especially for the All-Star game, right? Don't think that would necessarily go well or be very popular in season, but for the All-Star game, it does sound like a very good idea. Not just because it's cool to watch guys hit dingers, but also because, you know, this is sort of an exhibition game. There is a fatigue level to playing in these games, especially for pitchers. And so how are you going to make sure that everyone is in the best shape that they can be to come back? And speaking from a fan perspective, even though it's this big event that gathers so many of these icons, how long do you actually want that game to go, right? Before it gets sort of boring for you as a fan, or you have to go home because you have to feed the cat or whatever it is, right? There's so many variants here or variables that come into play. It would be pretty cool. I'm not entirely sure how common it is that the All-Star game
goes to extras.
Extra,
I don't know. I can't remember the last time that it did go to extra innings. I think if they were to do this, it might just be right when it went to extra innings.
Yeah.
Rather than waiting for when they got to the 11th or the 12th, just make it, you know, no overtime, just straight to the shootout.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see that. I think that it would be really, really cool to watch the best pitchers in both leagues go against the best hitters in that sense of like, this is what we are trying to do. That might give the pitcher an advantage, right? If you know that they're going for the homer.
Yeah, would you have to throw a strike maybe? Like, it, you know, kind of like in cricket, I believe, where it's a bad ball. It doesn't count if it goes wide.
Nice.
Maybe you would have to throw a strike or else the guy would not be penalized whatsoever, even if he swung.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool, right? Because if you have to challenge the hitter and you know that the hitter is going for it, then it becomes a competition of pure talent. My best pitch in the zone against your best swing. Yeah, I like that idea, Joel from Burlington.
We got another text, no name here. How about a catcher accuracy throw? Put a target beside the base. Now, I think, and please send us your name and location, by the way, so we can shout you out on the show. I believe this was done before. I thought I saw a video, maybe on Twitter, in like the early to mid 70s, that at one point in time, they did do catcher accuracy throw. And I think we continue to, you know, even with the analytics kind of revolution of the last 20 years, only recently continue to talk more and more about pop times and the way that catchers are able to influence, you know, the running game really, and can measure that. I do think it would be fun to see guys like Adley Rutschman, let's say, or see some of the other, you know, JT Realmuto and some of those guys really try and throw the most accurately. And like we mentioned with the outfielders, maybe that would appease the teams a little bit more as well, so that the guys wouldn't hurt their arms.
Yeah, those are all fascinating ideas. And the ones that involve base running to me are the coolest. It's such a unique part of the game. And it's something that we know that brings so much excitement to fans as well. And so whatever the league could do to sort of play that up, especially in an event like the All-Star break, it would be appreciated, I think. And there are, you know, just we are sitting here right now, and sure, like, we've thought about this beforehand, but we just sort of launched this idea, right, to our listeners. And we've gotten a lot of good ideas.
Yeah.
Which tells you that there is room to explore some other stuff here and expand it. Just as long as they don't get rid of the celebrity softball game.
Yes.
I will fight
Shai DeVita. Much to Shai DeVita's chagrin. You need JoJo Siwa out there.
Every year.
Yeah.
Every year. She's a star in her own right.
Yeah. A couple more ideas coming in. Buster in Peterborough. He had an inaccurate throw to first challenge. So players taking grounders around the diamond. Mm-hmm. Maybe the first baseman's not allowed to move or something from a stretch position, something like that. He had a base running speed challenge, which we talked about. And then I was hesitant to bring this up, although I really enjoy it, but I'm not sure it would play well on TV. He says the bunt challenge. Players bunt for targets. I think, you know, at times when I was a kid, maybe it's like putting two buckets, like Buster said, into buckets, you know, down the lines and seeing if guys can bunt it in. I don't know if you can make people watch bunting for longer than like 15 minutes without them leaving the ballpark. But maybe it could be a part of a larger challenge, you know, like in the NBA skills competition, there's different things you have to do. You have to dribble around. Other guys kind of just run through that these days. You have to pass into targets. You have to hit a three or whatever it is. Maybe bunting a ball into a bucket is part of some larger challenge.
Yeah. I'm not the best person to talk to about this because I love it. I think it's great.
Okay, I really like it too. I just don't think the people will
exactly,
like it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very much a niche taste or something that doesn't necessarily appease to the masses or to the more casual fan, which is a big part of what the All-Star break tries to cater to, right? So I don't know. But I love it though. I know I'm a nerd for saying that, but it's just so cool, right? To watch a well-placed bunt is very satisfying, I would say, Ben.
Yeah, it's a very good skill that less and less people have these days. One more, Andrew from Hamilton, talking about Major League Baseball, maybe having a skills competition like the NHL, fastest running for base to base, fastest pitch for a pitcher, which I think they would definitely worry about arms there. But I really like this last one, accuracy pitch, painting all four corners, kind of like the NHL skills competition where you shoot for the four targets in the four corners. There, we are coming up on a break right now on Jays Talk Plus. First hour wrapping up. We have a really exciting second hour ahead of us. Both Buck Martinez and Chris Rose from John Boy Media are going to join us. Buck is there at the All-Star game. We will hear from him. So is Chris Rose. He'll give us a bit of a wider scope on Major League Baseball as well. This is Jays Talk Plus. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. And we'll be back in a moment on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two of Jays Talk Plus. We're taking you till noon on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Schulman. She is Julia Kreutz, Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick. Behind the scenes as well. It is the day of the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. And while Vladdy did a great job yesterday, I think it's time to put that in the past now, turn our attention toward the big game, which he will likely feature in tonight between the American League and the National League. It's a really loaded slate. I mean, it always is. It's the All-Star Game, but it feels like two very fun rosters that we get to see today for the All-Star Game.
Yeah, it's always fun, and it's always sort of cool to see just the amount of talent. But this is one of those where I don't know necessarily that you could even pick a favorite, right? I know that historically over the past few years, the American League has had the advantage. But looking at the rosters, I think it's pretty evenly matched here, Ben.
Yeah, it's, you know, it maybe because of the notable absences of guys like Trout and Judge, you could lean National. But at the same time, Jordan not going to play for the American League as well. So maybe with that, you lean in that direction. All of the elected starters for the National League are going to play in the game.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. But then again, you look at the American League, Marcus Semien leading off here with Shohei Ohtani. Just that 1-2 punch of Semien Ohtani it makes it worth it to sort of turn on your TV, right? It's going to be very, very nice to watch those guys play together. Randy, we all saw what he's capable of yesterday. It's certainly a loaded lineup, and it's hard to count sort of the AL out. Of course, no one is, but even though some of those guys like Judge and Alvarez and Trout are not playing, this is still a very, very interesting lineup. Now, if the AL ends up winning this, what does it say about the National League?
It is interesting because, I mean, it's essentially like the Texas Rangers and the Tampa Bay Rays against the Atlanta Braves and all of their former players.
Pretty much. That's really funny.
You have so many Braves in the National League side, then plus Freddie Freeman. You obviously have four Texas Rangers starting for the American League. Yeah. Adolis Garcia was brought in as well as a replacement for Aaron Judge. Yeah. I believe it swapped for Judge. It is, you know, a really, really interesting lineup. But the NL, too, I think, you know, if you were to put one in favor on the AL side, the NL brings a far less experienced pitcher in to start the game in Zach Gallen, who has been phenomenal this year and really has been very good for the last couple of years. And now that the Diamondbacks are good, he's starting to get more recognition.
Right.
But you bring Gerrit Cole in on the other side, who's, I believe, pitched in five previous All-Star games. He's never started one, but if someone's going to get jitters between the two, which I'm not saying either of them are, I would put more of my money on the guy pitching in his first game and starting that game than Gerrit Cole, who's really been around the block.
Yeah, Zach Gallen has certainly gained more of notability this year, or even at the end of last year. He was breaking records with the D-backs last year in terms of strikeouts, and it kind of really put him on the map here. Has been very, very good this year, and it's extremely warranted that he's going to start this game. Very, very well deserving. Both managers went on record here saying that they were easy decisions for them to pick the starters this year. Speaking of Gerrit Cole, you're right. This will be his sixth appearance, his first start. And this is a guy that's still without a Cy Young Award.
Yeah, lost out to his own teammate in his best chance back when Verlander did it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's and that to me is, first of all, it speaks to sort of the talent depth that exists in the American League on the starting pitching side, but also how much longer can this guy remain unheralded, right? It's been a while. He's been doing this consistently for so long, and the sort of the accolade is still missing. Do you believe, Ben, that this could be the year, and I don't know what the odds say, but that this could be the year that puts him over the top here maybe and finally gets him that first Cy Young Award?
As we, you know, end this unofficial first half and look toward the second, I really think he's my favorite right now. Mm. He is right in there with the best in terms of earned run average in all of the American League. He's tied for fifth with Luis Castillo at .285. Framber Valdez is leading it, but he's been a little bit hurt this year, and I think innings matter a lot with this award. McClanahan is ahead of him, but innings matter a lot with this award. And then Uvalde and Dane Dunning, nothing to take away from either of those guys, but I would pick them more as probably regression candidates if I had to, just even a little bit from their sub-3 ERAs. And if you look at WAR for pitchers, Cole is by far in the lead because not only does he pitch so well in terms of limiting runs, but he pitches so many innings. So I do think that it could be a bit of a perfect storm for Gerrit Cole this year with a couple injuries around him. I'm not ruling Kevin Gausman out of the mix either, but he'd likely have to drop his ERA into the twos to start contending, because then I think the main argument for Gausman is also a lot of innings and a ton of strikeouts, obviously leading the American League.
Yeah, I was going to ask where you think Kevin Gausman ranks here, because it's been a little bit maybe frustrating for Blue Jays fans and for people around this team overall to see the absence of Kevin Gausman's name in these conversations and early voting and odds and all of that stuff. I think there is a case to be made for him to at least be considered here, right, Ben? And I understand that there have been a couple of clunkers, but that's part of the game. But when you look at not only the body of work that he has put in, but what he's represented really to this team, where do you think right now that you would rank Kevin Gausman when it comes to those Cy Young odds?
I think I'd have him somewhere in like the 4 to 5 spot, kind of. I think that you do need to be really in the mix in that top 2 or 3 in terms of earned run average to get first place votes. I think that people look at ERA for the most part above anything else these days, kind of like the Felix Hernandez revolution, as the All-Star game is in Seattle when he had a losing record and won the Cy Young. I think it was a losing record and won the Cy Young. So I do think that he needs to get, you know, just a little bit higher up. He's 8th in the American League right now in ERA at 3.03, which is phenomenal. It's really, really good. But he's the first guy, you know, the top 7 all have ERAs that start with 2. He's the first guy outside of that. Now, he's helped by the fact that, you know, he's thrown 115 and 2/3 innings. That's, you know, 2 innings off of the American League lead. But I think I have Cole ahead of him. I think right now Nathan Uvalde ranks ahead of him. Uvalde leads the American League in innings pitched and has a .283 earned run average. Again, I think that there's a good chance he could regress, but I think that's part of it. And so I think if he maintains his innings pace, or probably reduces a bit because they have a 5th starter, and maybe because of those extra days of rest, he might drop a little in the innings pitch leaderboards, but shoot up in the ERA leaderboards. Tie that in with the fact that he both leads in total strikeouts and Ks per 9. I do think he has a really good shot. If you can make the case that, you know, even if his ERA isn't best, maybe it's 2nd or 3rd best, and he strikes out more guys than anyone else, people do really value strikeouts. And if the Blue Jays are a good team as well, that shouldn't factor in, but I think a lot of the time it does. I will say, though, you're talking about him being in consideration. He certainly, even if the season ended today, would get a lot of votes in and around the mix. I just think he lands closer to 4 to 5.
Right on. It will be a tight race, as it always is, right? The Cy Young, especially in the AL side, I think is always something that is worth following. And as we speak about odds and as we speak about, you know, who do we like here for this award, I also want to ask, we kind of touched on it a little bit, but kind of around it, who do you like in the All-Star game to win here? Are you going AL or NL?
I think I think I'm going to go with the American League still. I with Adolis Garcia replacing into the starting lineup, you do have five Texas Rangers in there, but they are the most high-powered offense these days in the American League. And I think that they might be able to slug their way through this with, you know, some really, really talented pitchers on both sides for sure. But I think right now that the American League has some absolute just dynamite guys in the starting lineup. And you look to the bench for like Jose Ramirez on the bench, Adley Rutschman, Salvador Perez on the bench, Bo Bichette on the bench. And I think that, you know, there were so many really close calls for this starting lineup that I do think that the American League has a good shot. But like my home run derby predictions, this is not betting advice. What
no,
do you think?
Listen, let's hedge our bets here. And so I'm going to go with the National League.
Nice.
So that tomorrow we can say, you know what? Jays Talk Plus had it right.
Yes, Jays Talk Plus had it right. Well, here's another prediction for you. And you had brought this up when we were at a break. Does Jordan Romano pitch in this All-Star game?
Yeah.
He didn't get into the game last year in a similar replacement type role. Does he make his first appearance?
Right on. I would assume so. It was Dusty Baker who managed last year, too.
Yeah.
So Dusty's aware that Romano was the only pitcher not to come in. I understand that he came in late. He came in as a replacement. But, Romano even alluded to this. He was like, I hope I get to pitch this time. And so I think that there's awareness around the situation, and it would be odd to leave him out for the second year in a row. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that there's a pretty good chance that he'll come into the game, and we have seen how good he is, right?
Yeah.
He is probably one of the best closers in the AL right now. So it's very, very well deserving for him to be here, Ben.
One guy that we probably won't see pitch, unfortunately, is Shohei Ohtani. Some blisters on his fingers, but he is the starting DH for the American League, and the reserve DH coming from the same division, Brent Rooker, spoke with the media a little bit earlier about a funny interaction he wants to have with Shohei Ohtani. Take a listen.
What players you looking forward to meet personally?
Yeah, Shohei. I think number one. So there's a really cool picture of me hitting a homer off Shohei in Anaheim, and I'm going to approach him very humbly and try to get him to sign it, because I think that is that's something that I would love to have forever. Because I mean, if there's anybody doubting that he's the best baseball player of all time, I don't really know why they are, because he could be the front page story in every newspaper every day, and it wouldn't be talked about enough what he's doing from an offensive and pitching standpoint. It's crazy. So I'm gonna definitely introduce myself to him and again, very, very humbly and very meekly, see if he will sign that picture for me.
That is Brent Rooker of the Oakland Athletics. Awesome to see him at the All-Star game, and a pretty bold move, but I have a feeling that Shohei will kind of like it, trying to get a signed picture of him homering off of Shohei Ohtani.
100%. I mean, everything that we have seen from Shohei Ohtani points in that direction. And, Rooker going on the record and saying those things, it's what the All-Star break is all about. It's really bringing these guys together. I'm a little surprised maybe that he hasn't had that chance before, given they play in the same division, but the picture story and the autograph is going to make for a very, very good story. Certainly a bold request. And speaking of boldness, I hear,
yeah,
Ben Schulman, that you have a bold suggestion, prediction?
Kind of just an opinion, to be honest. I'm about to get myself in a little bit of trouble. My Twitter's at BenShulman7, and you can text in too if you don't like it. So we talked yesterday about how I enjoy, and I think you said too, the Home Run Derby more than the All-Star game. And
right,
to a certain extent, all All-Star games in all sports every year feel like every year, you know, they're just taken a little bit less seriously for probably good reason.
Yeah.
And that it slightly, you know, hurts maybe the product of just the actual game on the field. For a long time, and I will admit this was an incredibly stupid rule, the All-Star game determined home field advantage,
yes,
in the World Series. Only a couple years ago now, they decided to switch that. Because, again, I'm not going to say it wasn't. It was a very stupid rule. But I enjoyed the All-Star game more when that happened, because they kind of had to try. Like, there was a reason to play. And it's, you don't play baseball 50% to a certain extent. Like, you're going to throw your pitch 90 miles an hour if you throw 90 miles an hour. But the game really used to have a meaning. And I'm not sure if I want it back or not, but I did enjoy it. Actually seeing the All-Stars, the best players in the world, try and win a game against each other while still substituting everyone in, but trying to win a game against each other with something on the line. So I guess to make it a little less controversial, I wonder if there's something else they could put on the line that would entice people. I know in other sports they've put money at times, like hockey, but, you know, for the majority of guys who are All-Stars, they're likely fairly well compensated.
In a sport without a salary cap.
Yeah.
We're good.
They're likely, even with, you know, the three-year fixed deals and the three-year ARB, they're probably still fairly well compensated. But is there something, and I don't know what, that could get the fire going a little bit with these guys and help determine something that would entice them to play, you know, pretty close to all out at least?
I'm not going to disagree with that. I think that it's problematic to have seating or home field advantage.
In the World Series especially. It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal.
Especially because there's guys on these rosters that know for a fact that their team is not going to make the World Series.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a little bit of an issue when it comes to that. But I do agree with you that it would be cool if there was something else that we could sort of put into place to make the game count a little bit more. At the same time, again, no one wants to get hurt. No one wants to do something that will hinder their team's chances in the second half of a season. So, yeah, you know what, Ben? That is very much a bold opinion. That is something that I
want something on the line, but I know it doesn't make sense. It's just a game for kids at the end of the day, you know?
I didn't know what to expect when you said, I'm going to come in with a controversial opinion. I did not think that was going to be it.
Okay.
But I respect it. I do. Good luck on Twitter.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. You can text us 590-590. Tweet at me with your thoughts. Maybe if there's something you think that could entice them. I mean, I do think money is a simple answer, and not that these guys wouldn't be motivated by a little bit of extra money, but like you said, if you're diving, you know, let's say each player wins $100,000, if you're diving, you could cost yourself $100,000,
you
know, in the future. So I don't know how much money they would really be able to put up that would entice the players to go all out, and maybe it would also hurt some of, you know, just the general feelings around the game if it became about money in a way, whereas people kind of see it as like a romantic-y kind of, you know, like you get paid for the 162 games. You don't get paid for the All-Star game. It's kind of like a you choose if you want to go type thing.
It is wild to me, though, that it's that recently or not far ago, it was that is how home field advantage was decided in the World Series.
Yeah, I forget which year. I'm going to take a look for it right
now. But it's, to me, first of all, who came up with that idea?
Someone who thinks like me, I think.
Yeah, seriously.
Since 2017.
So that is really recent.
Which is kind of funny because I remember, and this is when they were in the National League, people used to say like, well, what if someone on the Astros is pitching, because they were terrible forever, against someone on, you know, pick a random, like the Orioles, and that's going to determine the World Series. And then right when they switched it, the Astros have been in the championships here. I'm not like alleging Astros things here, but they've, since it switched, the Astros have had like the greatest records in baseball almost every year and hosted a bunch of World Series and won a pair of them. So.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Baseball is very unique in many ways. I think that's just something that we can add to that. But I think we're better now, because it's just record and that's where you go off of. I do believe that is probably a better way to do it. Not saying it's a perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
Especially now with the new playoff format, we saw how long the Astros last year just sat idle for such long periods of time because they just kept winning and then they had to wait for other rounds of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that kind of disrupted their rhythm a little bit. They spoke about that in the ALCS. Like, yeah, we just swept and we didn't have a wild card round. And so kind of here we are just waiting. And that can be disruptive. At the same time, like, I guess that's the cost of winning 106 games and then just being really good in the playoffs. And so, yeah, it seems like, you know, that team deserves home field advantage, if you will, and sort of having the ability to stay in their home and prepare, even though they're not playing games, is valuable as well.
All-Star Game will not determine World Series home field advantage anymore, but a guy who is there for the All-Star Game, he will be in the booth tonight for the game that you can watch on Sportsnet. Buck Martinez joins us now on Jays Talk Plus. Buck, it's Ben and Julia. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. What has it been like so far? We haven't been to Seattle for an All-Star Game since 2001. What's it been like for you there?
It's actually a little bit more lively than I expected. I went to the draft. I went to the Home Run Derby last night. The crowd's phenomenal. Support's been tremendous. And per usual, there's a lot of Blue Jay fans here. Everybody's come down from B.C. and Alberta and Manitoba, and I see a lot of Blue Jay fans in town. But I think it's a great atmosphere. Obviously, it's a beautiful ballpark. I've actually been to all three All-Star games here, 79, 2001, and then this one this year. So it's a great atmosphere. Seattle certainly deserves it after their run last year, and now it's going to be a great atmosphere. Last night's Home Run Derby was special, obviously, with Vladdy winning in a Rose Arena in that final. So it was a pretty special night. I think it's going to be a great game tonight.
Certainly a good way to kick off sort of the festivities there, Buck, with Vladdy Jr. winning that Home Run Derby. Kind of a large contingent for the Blue Jays, even though they don't have any starters here. But what do you expect to see? We all know that there's a showman in Vladdy, but when you look at Bo and Witt and Jordan Romano, sort of that group overall, what are you expecting to see from them tonight in Seattle?
Well, you know, Witt's in his third All-Star game. He hasn't had a hit yet. Bo's only had one at bat, and he struck out. So I know those two guys are really motivated to get in a ball game and get a hit, make a contribution. And, you know, Jordan made the team last year, but he didn't pitch either. So I think he'll get in the game. I just have a feeling, given the situation with the pitchers and everything. We'll meet with the managers before the game, and I'm sure they'll tell us what their plans are as far as pitching. But I expect I certainly expect Bo to play. I hope Witt plays, and I expect, of course, Vladdy and Romano, I think they'll both play as well.
Buck, you were managing the Blue Jays when Paul Quantrill made the All-Star game in 2001. We see kind of the, you know, the shows that the guys get today where their manager will call them in, announce it in front of the clubhouse. Do you remember how Paul found out? Did you inform him? Was it anything similar like that?
You know, Ben, I honestly can't remember. It was such a long time ago, but he was certainly worthy of it and represented us very well. He always has been first class, but I know now it's a big deal. I mean, people are recording the meetings and, you know, managers will call a clubhouse meeting or call the player into his office. But, yeah, back then I'm not really sure how he found out.
Buck, speaking a little bit more of the Blue Jays in this year's All-Star game, I believe Bo Bichette, it's pretty safe to say that he is the headliner here for the Blue Jays that are in it. He missed the All-Star game last year after sort of a slow start to the season, but this year went on a tear, right? He has been a, sort of a staple of consistency at the plate and doing things that he's really, really good at and sort of embracing that. How do you see, you know, Bo's growth from last year to this year? How is he different from a year ago?
I think the biggest thing, and it started last September, is the biggest thing that he's not trying to please everybody and he's not trying to be perfect. He understands he's going to make some outs and he's accepting that, and because of that, he's freed himself up. And once again, he's having another great season with the bat. I think the biggest thing for him is how much he has improved defensively. And he picked up a lot of good things from Marcus Semien when they were teammates. And first and foremost, it was the fact that Semien works tirelessly, takes ground balls every single day, and never misses a game. And I think Bo took something out of that, and he's taken the same approach now. And because of that, he's played so much better in the field, and I think now he's being recognized as a regular, everyday shortstop. I heard an interview with Jose Altuve the other day asking Altuve to pick his shortstop that wasn't his teammate that he'd want to play with, and it was Bo Bichette. So that's a pretty high praise from another all-star and another terrific player in the big leagues.
Buck, just to follow up on Bo, I don't know how much of his reporting duties you saw with ESPN yesterday, but for those of us who are sort of with him on a daily basis, he comes across as more of a quiet guy, seemed to come out of his shell a little bit there. What were your impressions of reporter Bo?
No, you know what, Bo is certainly on top of everything, and he's one of those quiet leaders in that clubhouse, and he's a guy who's got a pretty strong voice, especially in his relationship with Vladdy. You know, they go back a long way, back to the minor leagues, and I think he enjoyed that. He liked being involved in that thing, and, you know, a couple of times. I didn't see the live interview as I was at the ballpark, but I saw some of the highlights, and he did a nice job and had fun with it, and that's what's important.
A trio of former New Hampshire Fisher Cats with Bo Bichette there, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and John Schneider on the mound as well. How special do you think it was for those guys to kind of share that moment together, especially Schneider being one of, if maybe the only manager to ever throw to a player in a home run derby?
Yeah, man, I thought that was really cool. The way John, he agreed right away and never hesitated. You know, this time of the year, managers really enjoy the break, and I can certainly speak from experience, but John agreed to come out with Vladdy because they are, you know, linked at the hip for a long time, and with to have all those guys together, I think it was very interesting and very cool, and I think it speaks volumes about what John means to his players for Vladdy to ask him to come out and throw again, and you know, it's a good event. You know, John's got two young boys, and I'm sure he would have loved to have them here, but I know he's headed back to Florida to catch up on a little bit of rest, but he had a good time there, and it was really cool for those three guys to be involved in an all-star game.
Buck, we're certainly very excited to watch the Blue Jays in this game, but outside of those guys, is there anyone in particular that you are looking forward to watching tonight? Of course, Shohei is always a popular pick, but where do you stand here in who you're most excited to see today?
Of course, Shohei Ohtani is doing things we've never seen on a baseball field before, both on the mound and at the plate. But Ronald Acuña Jr. is also having that kind of year. He's also already stole 41 bases, and last year, John Birdie of the Marlins stole 41 bases to lead the National League. And Acuña has really matured the last couple of years, and he's gotten over his injuries, and he's a dynamic player. He can do so many things. He's a great outfielder. He's got a strong arm, steals bases, hits home runs, and he's just an exciting player. I think those are the people we're going to highlight tonight when we talk about the Open for the All-Star game, is Ohtani and Acuña, because right now you could have a pretty strong argument that they should be the MVPs in their respective leagues, the kind of season they're having. And, yeah, it's the second half ahead of us, but the Braves generally play a little bit better in the second half than they do in the first, so that speaks volumes about what kind of team they have.
Yeah, and they had beat the Rays in a series to end the first half. Those are the top two vote-getters, too, in Ohtani and Acuña. You mentioned Acuña's running, and we're looking a little bit back at the first half this week. Some of that, obviously, you know, may be influenced by the pitch clock. How do you think you would have dealt with it as a catcher with some of the runners, frankly, knowing the timing of your pitchers as they see a clock wind down?
Yeah, the pitch clock has an impact. The base obviously has an impact, but I think more than anything, catchers for the last several years haven't been concerned about stolen bases. So now they're trying to play catch-up. You know, Acuña's been caught seven times, and the guys that have caught him are all strong-arm players, including Gabe Moreno in Arizona. But, you know, when I played, obviously, Ricky Henderson, Billy North, Bird Campaneris, everybody was running, so we had to throw. And now catchers haven't had to throw for the last several seasons, and now that skill is going to have to be ramped up because runners are running. They're stealing at a higher rate and a more successful rate than they ever have. So it's going to be a part of the game. But the catchers, I think, have to just throw better, throw more, throw often, and throw more accurately. But, yeah, it is a challenge now with the disengagement rule. But I think more than anything, the catchers are playing catch-up right now.
How'd you fare against Ricky?
I liked him that once, I think. He probably had 20 stolen bases, but I threw him that once.
That's all that counts.
That is incredible. One last one from us, piggybacking off of Ken Griffey here. What has it been like, Buck, and especially what does it do to the game to have guys like Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Cameron, Dan Wilson around these events and interacting with current players as well as fans?
Well, you know, Julia, what happened now is the commissioner has brought all of these former players into his office and are acting as ambassadors. And when you see around the cage yesterday, Adam Jones, CeCe Sabathia, Albert Pujols, Derek Jeter, David Ortiz, it was great to have that many players around because now that shows the younger players the history of the game a little bit. But certainly in Seattle, it's all Ken Griffey Jr. There's a beautiful statue outside the ballpark. There's, you know, his name is all over. They have a big illustration of him in the tunnel by the clubhouses of him blowing a bubble. And he's just, he's all Seattle Mariners. There's no question about it. But it's great that this particular edition of the All-Star teams get a chance to see so many great stars here in person and meet them and talk with them. And I think that does a lot. And I think the baseball has done a great job in bringing these stars back.
Buck, we really look forward to seeing you and all those stars tonight. Thanks so much for joining us today and good luck with the broadcast.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. You too. That is Buck Martinez, of course, Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet, and he'll be on the game tonight. I forgot the link there where, you know, the 2001 All-Star Game in Seattle, a year that Buck managed the Blue Jays. And talk about star-studded, we were talking about this year, but that was Roger Clemens starting for the American League against Randy Johnson for the National League.
That's incredible.
The velo in that game is just insane. And for, you know, today a lot of guys throw in the mid to high 90s, but at that point especially. Not to mention Cal Ripken Jr. plays in his 19th All-Star game.
And listen, if you were there in 2001, shoot us a text or give us a call. We'd love to hear your stories. As Buck mentioned, there's usually a large amount of Blue Jays fans in Seattle due to the proximity there to BC and all of that. We know that there's a special connection, and it's cool to see that this is also true this year, Ben.
Yeah, really, really fun. If it's not going to be in Toronto, probably the next best option for Blue Jay fans, having it in Seattle. We cross our fingers, maybe the festivities return north of the border coming up pretty soon. Buck had talked about Shohei, and before we hit a break, a quick one for you here. Shohei Ohtani, I mean, he's so by far the major league leader in WAR, and I think regardless of even the advanced stats, for most people, so by far the most valuable player in baseball. If you were going to start a franchise and Shohei's not there, because right. I think he maybe you would go some other ways, but I think he's a pretty obvious answer. Who is your guy to start a franchise with that's not Shohei?
I think right now, and because of all the hype, and maybe I'm, you know, a little have a little bit of goggles on because of these stolen bases and stolen home and all of that, but I think Ellie De La Cruz is a pretty good.
I thought you were about to say Acuna.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But, you know, if you're talking about starting a franchise, a guy that's, you know, very, very young and starting his career, it's Ellie De La Cruz is pretty enticing. And I know that he still has a lot to prove and he's very much starting out. But when you look at the potential here, it's a guy that can't be overlooked. 100% Ronald Acuna Jr. is also a guy that would play well into this. Julio Rodriguez too. But, you know, keeping in the sort of the boldness theme here, Ben, and talking about a guy that's very, very young with a lot of promise and a lot of talent, I would pick right now De La Cruz.
I think that's a fair pick. I'll go on the younger side too, just because, you know, the contracts matter, stuff like
for
that.
Sure.
You want the guy pre-arb if possible. I'm going to go with the guy that I feel like sometimes is getting a little bit forgotten now that De La Cruz has come up, Corbin Carroll. I think Corbin Carroll's had a phenomenal start to the season. And I think will likely receive MVP votes this year. You know, had the injury a little bit before the All-Star break, and you hope that he's okay. I'd really love to see him. I know it's not great for the Blue Jays, but I'd really love to see him play in Toronto. But Corbin Carroll, I think, you know, looks like he could be one of the great players coming up in the National League.
Yeah, it's really interesting that, you know, when the D-backs last year, you could see that they had a surplus of outfielders, and there were areas that they needed to trade for. That is how the Blue Jays landed Dalton Barshow. But that front office was very categorical in saying that Carroll is off limits.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a good reason for that, and we're sort of seeing it now. Great pick, Ben. I'll tell you right now. And you're right. This is a guy that is maybe not getting a bunch of attention, especially with guys like De La Cruz coming up and sort of maybe stealing the thunder a little bit,
stealing the light a little bit. New kid on the block.
Yeah, for sure. But there's a reason why Carroll is an all-star this year, and there's a reason why he is an all-star, right? I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he went from futures game starting center fielder last year to all-star starter
this
year.
There you go. And that doesn't happen all that often,
no,
right?
No, it really doesn't.
That a rookie will go from futures game to all-star game and just really make the all-star game as a rookie. It's kind of a rare occurrence in baseball. So really cool to see, and someone who I agree will at least get MVP votes, and if he can continue sort of his pace right now, he has a pretty good chance.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's some good guys, but he is right in the mix, and he will be playing tonight. So you hope that he is healthy going forward as well. We're going to take a quick step aside. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. When we come back, Anthony Kastrovitz of MLB.com and MLB Network will join us just about 25 minutes to go. So stick with us on Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More minutes to go on Jays Talk Plus. Welcome back on Sportsnet 360 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Schulman. She's Julia Kreutz. Lance Kennedy, Jeff Azzopardi, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes. And we have one more great guest to talk to today. Anthony Kastrovitz of MLB.com and MLB Network joins us on the show. A lot to discuss. Anthony, thanks so much for coming on today. And how's it going so far in Seattle?
Oh, it's going great. It's been a fun All-Star week. You know, you love when an All-Star game's in a place where you just feel its presence, you know, across the whole city. Sometimes it gets swallowed, you know, if it's in a New York City or in L.A., you know, that kind of thing. But Seattle's waited a long time to have this game. You know, it's been since 2001, just like they waited a long time to get the playoffs until last year. So, you know, you're seeing the energy of what's a sneaky good baseball town.
Anthony, good to talk to you outside of Slack.
Yeah.
wondering if you could speak a little bit about your piece on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. yesterday, winning the Home Run Derby, first father-son duo to ever do it, with Vlad Sr. having done it as well. And just, you know, the atmosphere and talking to him after, what that meant to Vladdy Jr. to sort of join his dad in that accolade.
Yeah, absolutely. And Julia edited that piece, so, you know, any credit goes there. Yeah, it was a fun derby. Yeah, the Derby's just become, you know, the absolute clear highlight of All-Star Week ever since they went to the timer. Much like we've learned in the regular season now, you know, the pitch timer, the timer in baseball, it works and it makes everything better. And you know, that started in Cincinnati with Todd Frazier, and it's continued every year. It's just a really energetic event. And, you know, I just knew Guerrero was going to win last night. I did. We always just, you know, we always have eight reporters, each one assigned to one Derby guy. I was assigned to Guerrero, win or lose, and I just felt like he was going to win, because I was there in 2019 in Cleveland when he went crazy and didn't win. I think he just kind of ran out of steam that year because of the epic duel he had with Jack Peterson in the semifinals, where it went to three swing-offs and he had 40 home runs in one round, and he was just kind of gassed and still pushed Pete Alonso to the limit. But ultimately, it was one of the great Derby performances that did not net a victory. So I just felt like he's going to be in a better position this year to do this and to get the job done. And lo and behold, he did. You know, this year it was Julio Rodriguez who had that fate of, you know, the curse that comes with hitting 40 plus home runs in a single round, you know, So then he goes down to Vladdy, and then Vladdy gets it done against Randy Arozarena in the final round. And Vladdy just has that. It's just such a powerful swing, you know, such a beautiful thing to watch. And when he gets in a groove, he's just lining them out. Pretty, you know, it's just an incredible thing to behold. He doesn't need to loft the ball a lot. He's just hitting rocket line drives. And when he gets going, there's no stopping him. And there's no stopping him last night. So it's cool to have that, you know, the first father-son combo to win the Derby. And now he just has to go off and be a Hall of Famer, you know, no pressure.
And then we see if a couple of his other siblings could win a home run derby coming up in 5 to 10 years. One guy that I think we'd all love to see in a derby at some point is Shohei Ohtani. And you released a piece about Shohei and about Japanese baseball in general and that being showcased, of course, in the home of Ichiro Suzuki, arguably, if not the greatest Japanese major league player of all time. Can you give us a little insight on that and kind of what's going on in Seattle to showcase, you know, one of the greatest Japanese players ever in Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah, this is really cool. I did a piece in Black History Month in February on Don Newcomb and Larry Doby. And you know, they were the first, like, established major league stars who, you know, when their MLB careers, you know, were winding down or in fact over, they went over to Japan and, you know, kind of established that bridge that we now know so well, where you see established major leaguers revive their careers or finish their careers in Japan. And then, of course, you know, you have great players who come over from Japan, like Ohtani, like Ichiro. And it's been a really productive relationship, I guess you could say, between between American ball and Japanese baseball. And a gentleman I spoke to for that piece had told me, hey, you know, we're going to be at the All-Star game. We're going to have this exhibit on the history of Japanese baseball. We'd love for you to check it out. So I went and checked it out. And it's really powerful exhibit. You know, you learn a lot. The most striking thing is, you know, you had these Japanese American players who could not play in Major League Baseball at that time because of segregation at the major league level. And, you know, they had their traveling teams and they played against barnstorming teams and all that. But, then World War II hits and, you know, it's an awful part of our history where Japanese, you know, people of Japanese descent in concentration camps. And here they're playing baseball behind barbed wire. You know, they're having games on concentration camps. And it's just a really striking part of that exhibit. So, it's just kind of it covers all aspects of that history. That's a really overlooked part of baseball history, you know. And you have this sort of traveling circuit of Latino heritage in baseball, the All-American Girls, you know, League. The Negro Leagues, of course, have a fabulous museum in Kansas City, and they have traveling exhibits. And so they're trying to, you know, get this exhibit going as part of that circuit, basically. And this is the first time they've been at the Fan Fest, you know, Play Ball Park at the All-Star Week. And they were really excited about that. And then, you know, some 2,000 feet away, you've got Shohei Ohtani, who is clearly the biggest star here, the star among stars. And it was shown just in the sheer number of people who wanted to, you know, stick a camera in his face yesterday at Media Day. And so, you know, you don't get a Shohei Ohtani without those pioneers who came before him.
Significant strides, obviously, Anthony. We are in such a good place right now, I believe, with baseball when it comes to the plurality of the diversity. And then you have a Brent Rooker saying that he wants Shohei to autograph his picture, hitting a homer off of him. You have the Latino players having so much fun yesterday at the Derby. What do you think that, you know, that level of plurality does to grow the game, and what has it been like to sort of be in that atmosphere with so many different cultures, languages, everything happening at once in Seattle?
Yeah, it's really, you know, I've been covering baseball for, you know, basically 20 years now, and you've watched that just continue. You see it just from our standpoint as media, you know, take that and just, you know, all the cultures you come across just in the media world because of what's happening on the field, you know. And so the press box and the All-Star Game clubhouse have become like United Nations meetings of a sort, you know. And it's a really powerful thing to see just how this game has spread and where the talent is coming from. It's coming from everywhere. And, you know, we harp on, for good reason, you know, the lack of, you know, American-born black players, you know, the low percentage. And it's something that is being addressed, you know, in the grassroots efforts, you know, and getting the bat and ball in kids' hands at a young age and that sort of thing. And that's an important effort. But this is, you know, even amidst that, this is the most diverse professional sport there is, you know, professional team sport. And I think that for people in baseball, myself included, you just get a really valuable life experience, you know, of coming across different cultures and different perspectives. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing. You know, baseball is a beautiful game itself, but what it's spawned in terms of that is really powerful.
Speaking with Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com and MLB Network, to turn it a little bit towards some news coming out in the last couple of days, your colleague at MLB Network, Sean Casey, it was reported, is going to become the next Yankees hitting yeah. coach. What do you think about that move?
Pretty stunning. You know, I love Casey. You know, he's so great on MLB Network. You know, he's got so much energy, and he's such a, I mean, everything people say about him is true. You know, they call him the mayor, and he's just the nicest guy in the world. I mean, that's all true. But the guy also knows a thing or two about hitting, that's for sure. I covered him, you know, in his prime with the Cincinnati Reds when he was just, you know, you knew what you were getting in Sean Casey. You know, you were getting a really steady player, you know, a reliable player, 300 hitter, et cetera. And so, but that did come totally out of left field. You know, I didn't expect to wake up to that news yesterday. And so, you know, good for Case. I'm happy for him. And, you know, him and Aaron Boone are buddies. And the Yankees, you know, we never know how much, you know, a hitting coach or a pitching coach impact things. There's no real way to quantify that. But the Yankees could sure use a boost. We know that. I mean, the Yankees without Aaron Judge are a pretty pedestrian lineup, and that might be giving them too much credit. So it's really unusual. Yeah, Brian Cashman has been there for however many years, 25 years, whatever it is, and never dismissed a coach mid-season, you know, midstream. He doesn't believe in that. He thinks that just points to people as a scapegoat. So for them to make that change speaks to, you know, how dire the situation was hitting-wise, and hopefully the mayor can go clean some things up.
Certainly not the first half or the start that the Yankees would have liked here. And this American League East is not getting any easier, right, Anthony? What do you make of where we are in the AL East here, especially, you know, with a lens on the Blue Jays and what they're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, you know, the Blue Jays have been kind of swallowed whole in that division. You know, they're having a fine season, generally speaking. You know, I think they're 9 games over 500, and so you know, I'm sure they would like to relocate to the American League Central if they could. They'd be dominating up there, but yeah, it's just a really fascinating subset of our season where we have a lot of surprises going on. But I think what's not a surprise is what's happened in the AL East, where it is so deep. I don't think people expected the Yankees to be, you know, running fourth in that division at the break. But overall, I mean, it was known that was you know, going to be a really dynamic division night after night. And you know, those records are reflective of the change, the underrated change, I guess. The season's been a big season of change, you know, with the pitch timer, et cetera. But the, you know, the more balanced schedule, you see the effects of that in the AL East, where they're not just beating up on each other. You know, they're going out and playing more games against the Central, against the West, and they're winning a lot of those games, and they all have records to show it. So they're all above 500. So, you know, I hope that the Blue Jays can make some magic here in the second half, because this is it. I mean, not it, but this is their window of opportunity to be a championship caliber club. And they've worked to build that and nurse that. But it hasn't amounted to much so far, you know? Time's ticking on some of those names, you know, and Matt Chapman is a prominent pending free agent. So, you know, they need to assert themselves in what's a really deep and dynamic division.
Anthony, there's a parallel universe somewhere where they put Detroit in the East and they put the Blue Jays in the Central. And I go to sleep at night just thinking about how many division titles they have. I really appreciate you joining us today. I apologize. We got to let you go as we're a little bit up against it. But thanks so much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
That's Anthony Castrovince, MLB.com, MLB Network as well. Really exciting stuff going on at the All-Star game. He colored us in on a lot of that. Quickly before we go, what are you looking forward to most?
Honestly, just the interactions. I think that that is what makes the All-Star break so special, the All-Star week so special. Seeing those guys sort of come together, guys that don't play with each other all that much or don't see each other all that much, that's the best part for me, Ben. Yeah. What would you say?
I'm looking forward. Buck mentioned that Bozo for I'm looking forward to see if he can pick up his first hit in this All-Star game. Really appreciate you tuning in today to Jays Talk Plus. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. Jeff Azzopardi, Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes. We will be back tomorrow, 10 to noon, once again. But have a great day. Thanks so much for listening to Jays Talk Plus.